Welcome back to Through the Word, Psalm 127 today on our journey, a psalm penned by none other than King Solomon. In verse 1, the master architect and builder writes, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain." Solomon would know. Solomon managed projects on an impressive scale. After all, he rebuilt Jerusalem, a palace, the Jerusalem temple, and established a construction, trade, and commerce empire. There was imported gold, the cedars of Lebanon, the massive carved stone blocks, and all the crafted artistry. And as someone who has served as contractor on my own home extension, there are many things that could go wrong with any building project. Countless delays and mix-ups. Ask anyone about their building project, and they'll ask you, how much time do you have to talk of all the delays and catastrophes that stalled their project? Yet Solomon, who built for a kingdom on a massive scale, gives glory to God in these verses as the one who really determines whether a project starts or stalls. This is because Solomon knew his own limitations. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. He'd spent 7 years building the temple, and it convinced him that his part to play on the project was minor. He knew God was his foreman. But he speaks of protection too. God doesn't just monitor the establishing of the city. He also monitors its safety. It would seem that yet another of Solomon's responsibilities as king was really, after all, in the hands of God. Theologians refer to God's invisible hand behind human events as God's sovereignty. And the word sovereign means king. Solomon was aware that Jerusalem had another king, a greater king, one who sat on a throne not built by human hands. Despite all of his responsibilities, Solomon's main role was to submit to his almighty king and ruler. Knowing what he knew, to do anything else would be useless or vain. That's why in verse 2 he refers to the vanity of trying to do everything all by yourself. In vain you rise up early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. Like Solomon, we need to let go of some of the control of our own lives. What a difference of how we approach life when we know God is in control versus when we know God has our back. When we try to control our own lives, we fuel everything by anxiety. In vain you rise early and stay up late. It's never enough. But when we know God is in control, working behind the scenes, we lie down and sleep restfully. Not restless fits and starts at attempts to sleep. I hear the echoes of Ecclesiastes here. Solomon speaks of all the things he tries to accomplish in life. He wanted to suck the marrow out of life, leave no experience or satisfaction on the table. He wanted it all. Yet, in Ecclesiastes, he makes a summary statement after all of his explorations of futility. "I concluded that there was no greater good under the sun to be had than to enjoy the wife of your youth and enjoy the fruit of the vine and to rest from the labor of one's hands." I picture Solomon at the end of a hard day's work, sitting in the garden with a glass of wine, talking to his wife, the wife of his youth, the one he's growing old with, who knows him and has known him for many years. The sun is setting, perhaps, and it's a warm summer evening, a cool breeze blowing up, and he thinks, "This girl, I've always loved her. Why has it taken me so long to come to this conclusion? Me, who was supposed to be so wise. Yet, at the end of all of it, I realize the best things in life are what God made every man or woman able to enjoy. Sitting in my garden tonight, resting after a satisfying day's work, looking into the eyes of my girl, and enjoying a glass of wine and good conversation. It just doesn't get any better than this. All the money in the world couldn't buy that." Solomon, who is richer than anyone besides God, didn't have to go anywhere, pay any more money, or do anything extraordinary to get the good stuff that life was all about. But then his gaze shifts to another part of his garden and he notices his children, perhaps happily playing, perhaps chasing a dragonfly or a bee. And he's filled with the warmth that he can't describe in verse 3. Children are a heritage from the Lord, offspring a reward from him. Solomon knows God has built his household when he looks at children. He remembers David, his father, telling him the story of how he told God, "I want to build you a house, God." And God responded that although it was a kind request, God would actually build David's household. "And on your throne, David, you shall have a king forever." This was the promise that through David's lineage, the Messiah would come, which is why Jesus was often called the Son of David. Solomon looks over at his children and knows, "I'm not the builder of God's house. God is the builder of my house, of my household. He has been building my family. Not just the building projects I was so consumed in, but my family. This one thing that actually gives me the joy I sought." And for that matter, every time Solomon gazed up at the temple he worked so hard on, he realized he lost his way and was probably reminded of God building Solomon's household as he built God's, reminding him, you can't outbless God. Verse 4, "Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. In the same way God was the builder and protector of the city, so having his children, Solomon thought, this is the Lord building my security. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth." Solomon would have many sons, and having many sons was like having many arrows in the hand. If one missed the mark, there would be others. God was building Solomon's family and securing it. After all, there was a pretty big promise attached to it. But in verse 5, he continues, "Blessed is the man, truly blessed." Think about that. Solomon, who sought blessing in everything else, realizes this in verse 5. "Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them," or children. "They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court." Solomon personally knew he had blown it. There was so much for him to be ashamed of in his life. But he says, "They will not be put to shame when they contend with their opponents in court." They could accuse Solomon of many things in court, but his children, they would do better than he had. They, therefore, would be worth investing his time and efforts in. My friends, we get distracted by so many things, don't we? But at the end of everything, family is the closest thing we have to understanding God. We are told that marriage is a picture of the love of God. And our children, man, it's hard to explain until you have them. We experience as parents God's love in a different way than ever before as we look down on them sleeping as infants. And we so want the best for them. When we spend time with them, pouring into them, we begin to get an appreciation of God's heart. And it will be the closest we will ever come to being like God in the natural world, catching glimpses of his love. Unfortunately, getting a taste of his pain, yet hoping as humans that our investment as frail human beings will pay off in their lives. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of children. And we end there today as we ascend the hill towards the peak, where like Solomon, we begin to see everything so clearly as we trust and climb, knowing that the Lord is the King. He's sovereign. He's in control. All we have to do is trust him. Keep ascending on our journey through the Word.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.